Luke 2, verse 48. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." The word of the Lord.
On most trails, I race ahead of my companions. I chant in my head to keep my legs moving, puke or pass out, and I don't rest until I risk losing sight of my hiking companions altogether. A thru-hiker on the Pacific Crest Trail taught me the mantra when our paths overlapped for a few hours on what was, for me, a day hike out of Owens Valley. His trail name, bequeathed by other hikers, was Tasty because he lived off dehydrated food packets called Tasty Bites. Tasty's beard grew long and scraggly, and the sun roughed his skin to pine bark. He found himself, ecstatically, in the throes of a 5-month, 2,000-mile journey from the Mexican desert to the Canadian border. 4/5 of the people who begin the Pacific Crest Trail quit before they finish. "Don't quit," Tasty said, "till you puke or pass out. Your cardiovascular system can take a lot more than you think. There's nothing wrong with being uncomfortable." At the top of the last dusty switchback, we looked west over the interior of the Sierra Nevada, the peak valley peak rhythm of pines and snow and stone that stretches toward the Central Valley. Tasty walked on to the evergreen north while I stopped and waited for my father and sister. A few days later, the three of us leave our little town on the floor of Owens Valley and drive into the mountains, intent on climbing one of the tallest peaks in our range. We've looked up at Mount Tom for decades. It's about time we made it to the top. We get a late start and approach in the dark. Our headlamps illuminate the crumpled beams of mining structures, and we pitch our tents among wrecked wooden cabins left bereft by avalanche. My sister and I have climbed other mountains with our father, all of them less daunting than Tom, and we know that he will always underestimate the scariness of a peak. The spell of the summit overwrites the difficulty of the ascent. He misremembers a climb as easy in the hopes that he can persuade someone to join him, to share the view. What he describes as barely steep becomes, to out-of-town relatives, a promenade with death. Sun wakes us in our tent, and I unzip the nylon door and look outside at the avalanche tongue of Elderberry Canyon. We fill water bottles from a lake. 16 switchbacks lead us through dust without a lone pine for shade. We abandon the trail at a dry basin and survey the south ridge, a line of rock against the sky, our route of ascent. Annie Dillard writes, "Spiritual path is the hilarious popular term for those night-blind mesas and flayed hills in which people grope for decades on end with the goal of knowing the absolute. They discover others spread under the stars and encamped here and there by watchfires. In groups or alone, in the open landscape, they stop for a sleep or for several years and move along without knowing toward what or why. They don't quit. Year after year, they put one foot in front of the other. Year after year, they find themselves still feeling with their fingers for lumps in the dark." In the years before the climb, I read books by Mary Austin, a writer and an intellectual who wandered the desert of my home region, Owens Valley, and followed her own unquiet drive. She got herself kicked out of the Methodist Church in 1905 for reading scripture more closely than the pastor would have liked. Austin was a searcher. She horrified all the members of her family and most in her society, save some who already found their wings responding to steady winds. This woman who floated from windows in childhood daydreams had something to teach me. Mary Austin often wrote of herself in the third person, not as I, but as in Mary, in order to summon distance and force. an understanding of herself as singular and contained, a self she called I, Mary, arrived to Austin when she was 4 years old. She wrote, "There was the familiar room, the flurry of snow outside, Mama kneading bread, Mary in her flannel frock and blue chambray pinafore, and inside her, I, Mary, looking on." Austin wrote, "I, Mary, suffered no need of being taken up and comforted. To be I, Mary, was more solid and satisfying than to be Mary by herself." Mary by herself was Mary Austin, out of her own control, beyond the larger awareness that she harnessed when she wrote. To become I, Mary, made her fearless. When you were I, Mary, she wrote, you could see Mary by herself as part of the picture and make her do things that, when you were she, could not be done at all, such as walking a log high over a creek, which gave Mary by herself cold prickles just to think about. I read on in her books to the subsequent phase of I, Mary's growing up. After years of observation, anguish, inquiry, after all that, Austin knew, suddenly thunder, lightning, rainbow, and the sound of wings. Follow me. Put your hand here, your foot there. Keep your belly to the rock. Maintain 3 points of contact. These were our parents' instructions. Their desire? You must learn to climb. Place a foot wrong and your head strikes a rock and cracks like a melon. On some family outing, my brother somersaulted over a bluff and reared up from the dust, red streaming down his skull as if from a showerhead. Scalp wounds bleed out of proportion to their severity. Mom wiped his face with a t-shirt and he forgot by the time the cut scabbed over. Mary Austin wrote, "All that long stretch between Salt Lake and Sacramento, the realization of presence which the desert was ever after to have for her grew upon her mind." Our parents told us, "You must learn to climb carefully." We might have broken bones, but we didn't. Might have died, but there are worse ways, worse fears for adults to pass on to children than all that tough and granite can do to a body. Fear for so long we glimpsed only in corners, a rustle in the brush at dusk, hunting time when you knew you ought to be inside. And yet the five of us lay on our backs after dark on Mountain View Drive, pavement warm, no thought of a car racing towards us to watch the moon rise. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin said, "Plunge into matter," and at another time, "plunge into God." In Rome, 8 AD, Ovid writes, "Before land was and sea, before air and sky, arched over all nature was all chaos." Mary Austin read her first geology book out of doors in her favorite crook of a cherry tree. Quote, "I remember how, as I read, the familiar landscape unfolded to the dimensions of a geological map. The earth itself became transparent, molten, glowing. The earth was once a bath of magma, a red eye adrift, perhaps resembling the sun through the smoke of a wildfire, a dull glare easy to stare at if you forget the danger of such a star. The upper layer of the earth cooled to rock, and basaltic magma jetted from the cracks. As the magma cooled, clouds formed, and for centuries, rain fell without pause. Continental plates shift, the heavy subsume the light and create new magma. Plates bond, then break apart. The supercontinent Rodina fractured and its pieces collided, North America into Europe and then into Africa to form Pangaea, which in turn fractured and flooded, leaving California and Nevada beneath a shallow sea. These days, you might find coral and the fossils of trilobites on the highest peaks. How sturdy Mount Tom appears from a distance. On its side, hours blur into rock. We trust the rock in the way you might trust a dog that once forgot himself and bared teeth. Granite chunks slide from beneath my boot and careen into the blue, an instability that surprises me after a lifetime spent gazing at the mountain from below. This is not good rock, I call to my father. Technical third-class mountaineering, he'll say later, when a friend asks what to expect from Tom. No need for ropes, but you need experience with boulder fields, or you could break an ankle, or die. Mary, the mother of Jesus, asked her son, mystified, "Why have you dealt with us like this?" 12-year-old Jesus had been missing for 3 days. When his parents finally discovered him, Mary said, "Your father and I have sought you, sorrowing." The mountains sheer to cliffs, and our path dwindles to a 3-inch ledge. That's enough for your foot to be fairly comfortable, says my father. Just hug the face of the mountain. We traverse spider-like. That chute looks promising. He points to the endless rise. Movement over unsteady ground clears space for something quiet to occur, for contact with rock and with the mind's undertow, even if in this quiet you are only running calculations that direct hands and feet somewhere beneath the current of thought you can observe and corral. This is the sense of the desert hills, Austin wrote, that there is room enough and time enough. Austin recalls herself as a child on a hill beneath a tree. All the world, she wrote, come alive together with a pulsing light of consciousness, the shattered brilliance of light through stained glass. How long this ineffable moment lasted, I never knew. It broke like a bubble at the sudden singing of a bird, and the wind blew and the world was the same again, only never quite the same. Mary Austin could never bring herself to pity the child who watched her father and younger sister buried in a hillside cemetery. She never had any disposition, she wrote, to feel sorry for Mary. She wrote, one doesn't, you know, for children to whom God arrives under walnut trees. Austin writes of her young self, quote, for her, belief was always so thin a shell to the spiritual urge that it was shed with comparative ease. Perhaps belief is a shell over something much harder to name. Mary Austin calls prayer the sustained process of desire. It is a process she does not pretend to understand, just as she could never define the desert that held her, gripped and fastened. The acid mind encounters a material that cannot be dissolved. The year before her death in 1943, Simone Weil, a woman who burned out young for her ideals, a philosopher, mystic, and near saint of the downtrodden, wrote that in her youth, quote, I saw the problem of God as a problem the data of which could not be obtained here below, and I decided that the only way of being sure not to reach a wrong solution, which seemed to me the greatest possible evil, was to leave it alone. Weil plumbed the distance between herself and a God that sometimes eluded her and other times singed her with closeness. Moses first encountered God as fire, a voice emanating from a burning bush at the base of a mountain. But at the top of Mount Sinai, God came to him as thick cloud. Is climbing a mountain an expression of sustained desire for something more than the summit? To cross the boulder field without broken bone is to see, from the top of what is old but not eternal, a vista that pushes past perception. And I shall probably never write a book about prayer, Austin wrote towards the end of A Little Black Tome, which was, in fact, a book about prayer, a book that called itself Impossible. Quote, because I shall never know explicitly where it is going. It ties and unties, patterns and unravels. The most that we can do is to take it at the flow, going with it, leaning upon it. In the end, Austin sees poppies erupting from desert soil, unexpected in a wash of brown, and stands seized by what she cannot name. 200 million years ago, the North American and Pacific plates collided and thrust up a volcanic range, the ancestral Sierra Nevada. This range stood for 100 million years until rain washed the peaks into a shallow sea. No one knows what caused the Sierra Nevada, as we know it now, to rise from that seafloor. In the past 10 million years, the eastern crest of the range, and with it the summit of Mount Tom, rose 8,000 feet while the valley subsided. Each year, as the range grows taller, the loose soil on which we live shifts and deepens. Earthquakes signal a rise. The summit of Mount Tom resembles the shattered surface of another planet. Gray rock heaped, some fragments propped upright and pointing to the sky. Snow huddles in shadows, lingering through summer. At our backs, the Sierra unfolds. And before me, the world lies impossibly small. My town, a patch of green, as if I could lift it, its pastures and potholes, and hold it in my palm.